Well, hello and welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Brower Show, bringing you guys the latest world news and health research. Hope everybody is having a blessed day today. Lots of more articles as well. I didn't get to all of them yesterday, so we got a lot of stuff to cover. And how are you doing today, Dad?
Austin, I'm doing great, but I just got some interesting news. I had a it doesn't affect me, but it's from a friend of mine. He's gotten divorced after 37 years of marriage, and both of his sons, and you know the gentleman, I'm not going to mention his name, and both of his sons have also gotten divorced, and it's kind of sad. One was married for 2 years, the other one was married for 3 years. He was married for 34, 35, 30, I think they've been separated for 3 years now, so they were together 34. They still haven't gotten this official divorce, but they haven't spoken to each other in years. And I want to address this for a second. You know, I got off the phone with him a few minutes ago, and I felt bad for him, but he said he was just happy to be out of the marriage. He said that there were a lot of things about the marriage that simply weren't working for him. Now, I realize that in order for a marriage to work, that each individual has to give 100%. Now, I'm not going to get preachy with you guys today, because I tell you what, everybody's marriage has to be worked on an ongoing basis. When you have more than one personality in a house, and you basically are trying to get along and get things done, you got to learn how to respect one another. And what I've learned is this. You can't do 50-50 in a marriage. It can't be that. It can't be 51 and 49. Each person has to give 100% in both directions. And then what I've learned from a biblical standpoint is, in the event that the man is supposed to be the head of the household, which sometimes they're not, they're supposed to be, that if there comes to be some, if there's a disagreement, which shouldn't happen very often, which can't be resolved, the man at this point, from a biblical standpoint, needs to make the final decision. Now, here's the caveat with that. If the guys out there are really bad with money and they're making really poor decisions with money, or really poor decisions with cars, or really poor decision with extra time, or all these other things, and they're not being a godly father or husband, it's very difficult for the woman to submit to the husband. Period. Fact. That's just how it is. With men, on the other hand, it's also very difficult to treat this, the woman of your dreams, you know, with total respect. If you guys are fighting all the time, and you guys are bickering about little stuff all the time, and if there's not physical intimacy taking place on a regular basis for the man. Now, this is one of the problems with this person who I mentioned today. Well, I won't mention his name out of respect for him and his family. The thing that women need to understand with a man is this: when it comes to physical intimacy, a man has a part of his brain that's called the nucleus accumbens, and whenever it sees a female, is attracted to that female as if it's starving to death. In other words, let me give you an example. If a man hasn't eaten for a week and he's starving to death, or he's been on a boat for 30 days and all he's had water and he's starving to death, and he suddenly gets rescued, he walks onto a ship and there's this big buffet, that's how he sees a woman when he sees her scantily dressed, or he's attracted to her, or whatever. And this happens with guys all the time. This nucleus accumbens ties up in the brain. And the immediate reaction is, you know, I need to go ahead and have a physical relation with this woman. I'm keeping this G-rated because I got a lot of kids listening. So I want you guys to understand something. This is the same thing I talk to my children about here on a ongoing basis, my 15, 17-year-old, my 19-year-old, all these kids. I talk about this stuff all the time. And I talked about it with you, Austin, when you were young. It's important that you don't separate each other as far as from a physical standpoint, from the intimacy, unless it's agreed upon by both parties and for a very short period of time. Because guys basically have to have physical relations to keep a healthy prostate and all the things that go in their reproductive systems on a regular basis. And I'm talking several times a week. Women, they don't need that. A lot of women basically don't really ever need to have a physical relation with a guy as far as from a sexual standpoint. They just don't feel that's necessary. And they make sure their husband understands that after they get married most of the time and after they've had their children. Now, a lot of this is taught through the Puritan churches, et cetera, hundreds of years ago, and a lot of that thought has carried through in some of the more, conservative churches. But guys, this is the problem that we have. We've got too many Christian marriages getting divorced. Too many Christians are having too many problems with their marriages. And women need to understand, okay, you don't have to have sex very often like a guy does, but you have to eat all the time. So kind of look at it this way. If you are looking at sex as a once-in-8-month standpoint, you need to start eating once a month and see how that makes you feel, because that's the way the guy feels. And see, it's not something that's okay. And so when I hear these things and I get these counseling sessions like this, well, this wasn't even a counseling session, it was a friend, but I've heard these same stories literally thousands of times when I was in practice, And I had to bring that up today because it's fresh on my mind. I want you to think about this for a second. So, guys, everybody has to work together and give 100% both directions. The husband needs to be a good husband, taking his family to church. I mean, I know you want to go hang out with your buddies and go fishing on Sunday morning and not go to church, or go hunting on Sunday morning and not go to church, or go bowling, you know, on Saturday night and not want to get up for church. I got all that, okay? You can't do that as a Christian guy. Now, if you're not a Christian and you're single and you're listening to me right now, and even if you are a Christian and you decide to go bowling or whatever you want to do and go to church upon occasion and read your Bible every day, okay, whatever. Now, also, I know a lot of people out there have been hurt by churches. I've got that too. I personally have been hurt by churches multiple times in my over 3 decades, almost 4 decades now of being a Christian. And the thing about it is, guys, you can't allow that to affect you in your relationship with Christ. There are a lot of preachers out there that are basically denizens of the deep, so to speak. They're just bad news people. And they're going to say things to you. I've had some crazy things said to me from the pulpit that I didn't even deserve. Now, sometimes I deserve things. I got that. But never from the pulpit. The Bible says in Matthew 18, if someone's offending you, you go to an individual and you speak to him individually. And if that doesn't work, you take 2 or 3 leaders of the church. If that doesn't work, you take them to the preacher. You don't nail them publicly. You don't do that. And so with these marriages, though, that I've got to share something with you. The feminist movement in the United States, and ladies, I know a lot of you aren't like that who are listening to the show. I got that, and thank you for that. It's basically destroyed a lot of the nuclear families. A lot of women now feel that they have to go out and get a job. A lot of women feel they have to go out now and they have to dominate their husband, that they don't want this guy to be a male chauvinist pig. All of these things and all of these discussions need to be had with you and your spouse in premarital counseling. And when you go to premarital counseling, don't take it as a joke. If you're listening to me and you're young and you're not married, you've really got to work through these issues with a counselor before you get married, so you know how to deal with these issues when they show up in the marriage. Because right now, this atavistic hatred of human beings, of Christians primarily, from Hollywood and the media, and what they're portraying constantly of what women's roles are and how women are just like men and women are just as strong as men physically. And the only reason they're not as strong as men physically is they don't think they're as strong physically. I mean, these incredibly stupid stuff like this. That has to do with hormones and testosterone, but they want everybody to be a unisex. They want everybody to be basically a genetic hybrid of one another. They want to have babies in test tubes and no longer have pregnant women and fathers and mothers. They want to destroy that entire nuclear family, and they really don't want you going to church, especially as a Christian, and worshiping Christ. They don't want that because of their hatred towards Christianity. That's why the same folks that run Hollywood also run the pornography industry in the United States and globally. And some of these guys are multi-billionaires who do this because their primary goal, and many of them have stated this, is to destroy the Christian nuclear unit in the United States because they hate Christians. So you have to understand who these guys are and what they're doing and how they're continuing to try to destroy you. Now, here's an article today from the Daily Wire, and I'm going to share this with you. It says, no surprise here, feminist witchcraft is on the rise. If you are a woman and dare to look within yourself, you are a witch, is their quote, which is ridiculous. Feminism and witchcraft go hand in hand like peas and carrots, like Simon and Garfunkel, like socialism and misery. As feminism has gained more cultural staying power over the years, it should come as no surprise to any of us that witchcraft would suddenly become great again. According to Lori Penny at The Baffler, the number of feminist witches have been steadily rising since the 1960s, to an apex in the Trump era. Since day one of his administration, these merry bands of restless witches have performed a variety of spells and hexes to bind the president from implementing policies that defund Planned Parenthood or protect religious freedoms. No telling yet if they have succeeded. Now, this is an article that is from Nikki Haley, and it's a very, very good article. You can read it. She goes on to write, today's witchcraft is back in vogue. A heady brew of the 90s, nostalgia's growth revitalism, and plain arcane slush funding and social media. Days after Donald Trump won the U.S. media, videos of women hexing Trump went viral around the world, encouraging budding magical practitioners to burn images of the president-elect to bring his works to ruin. Guys, you know, this is some sick stuff that's going on, and this is basically rooted in Satanism that we've talked about. And again, this is the atavistic hatred of human beings, primarily Christians in the United States, that they want to bring the women back into witchcraft and the guys become warlocks in this coven mess. Because remember, Hillary Clinton is a Sabbatean Kabbalist coven witch. She had her own coven in California in L.A. County, and she flew there every 6 weeks, according to Larry Nichol, to participate in coven activities while she was in the White House and also while she was in Arkansas as the first lady of the governor. Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton probably are the two biggest career criminals in the history of the United States. Bonnie and Clyde are just absolutely nothing compared to Hillary and Clinton. There's hundreds of dead bodies that have followed them. Billions of dollars have been flushed. Their Clinton Foundation was used to basically launder all kinds of drug money and all types of other funds. And as soon as, of course, she didn't win the White House, all of those huge contributions suddenly stopped. But we can't allow people in the United States, especially our children and the people that we love, to get associated with super liberal groups. They're going to drag them into this ditch and try to force division between men and women. They're trying to force division between blacks and whites and Hispanics, between blacks and whites, Hispanics, and Muslims. They're trying to force division between men and women. Everything they have, this is all part of that Cloward Pivot strategy, all part of the stuff that we talked about yesterday of dividing the masses of people in the United States into separate interest groups just so they can control them more easily. Guys, that's why, like Scarlett Johansson, when she led that Women's March in Washington, D.C., I will never pay for another one of her movies. I don't care if she's on Wonder Woman or The Avengers. I will never watch another movie that she's in and pay for it. I won't do it. If it shows up on TV and I'm watching it for free or whatever, I may, you know, go back and forth between commercials or whatever, but I'm done. And we have to understand, these people are not who you think they are. They're not who you think they are. Let me give you an example. A lot of these women now, the same thing happened with that Charlize Theron. And she's pretty, don't get me wrong. She's the one who played in that one movie, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. She's a pretty lady. She's been in Hollywood for over 20 years. But she's known in Hollywood for being just absolutely tyrant when it comes to relationships with men, if she even has relationships with men. And this last movie that she did, she just has a full-blown lesbian scene in that movie. And quite frankly, I'm not going to pay to see stuff like that, nor am I going to watch stuff like that, nor am I going to endorse her, or nor will I ever watch another one of her movies and pay for it. And we have to take that strong of a stand when it comes to Christianity, guys, because the truth of the matter is this. If we continue to support these guys for doing the filthy stuff that they do, we're never going to differentiate ourselves from them or from being a Christian. We can't do this. We have to stay away from these people and avoid them. If you have people in your life, other couples who hang out with you and your wife, and they're causing conflict in your marriage, you need to get away from those people. You need to get away from them. You don't need to be associating with them, and you need to realize that people that are like-minded need to stay together. The Bible says, "Coming out from among them, be ye separate. Touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you." And it's talking about everything in life. Stay away from business partners that aren't Christians. Stay away from other couples that aren't Christians. I mean, the main thing you should be talking about when you have groups of people together, you know, if you want to talk about guns and trucks and that kind of stuff, but you should also be talking about Jesus and repentance and salvation and church and all this other stuff. All these things should be blended together in a conversation. And if one of your friends doesn't want to talk about anything that has to do with Christ or Christianity, you may want to start witnessing to that person as far as what they need to do with their own personal life. Because guys, here's the thing. If you don't tell the people about Christ, if you don't try to help them to the best of our abilities, and we have a secret that we know about, and we're not trying to help these people, guys, shame on us. I mean, if you're in a hotel room, you know, at a convention, and you got a bunch of your friends in other rooms, and all of a sudden there's a fire in the doggone hotel room, you know, or in the hotel, and your friends have been overcome by the smoke and they don't answer the door, you know, kick the stinking door down and go save your friends and get them out of the hotel. You know, we should have that type of fervency when it comes to witnessing about Christ. And, you know, Austin knows this, and my wife knows this. You know, I've got multiple people that we bring over to the house. Some are not saved, some are. But one thing I will do is as soon as I get them here and they're by themselves with me, I start talking about Jesus. I had one guy who I know for many years now, he got saved. And another lady got saved, but she's not been to our house. I mean, I constantly am talking about this because if I don't, why am I here? I mean, am I just telling you guys to do it and I'm not going to do it personally? It's like the preacher that never brings anybody to church and tells you to bring people to church, but he never brings anybody to church. Guys, we all need to be working together in this environment that we have, this satanic environment that is so just obtuse right now with what's going on in the media and all the other things that are happening, all this obfuscation that they're doing. This whole thing is this. They want to bring us down into a feudal system to reduce us to slavery. They can't do that unless they break us up into special units. This is exactly what the Rothschild Bank tried to do with the Civil War in the United States. They tried to get the northern states to fight against the southern states, and they were very successful. This is the one thing that Lincoln did know about, and that's why he did print the greenback. But the way he handled the Civil War and Sherman's March to the Sea and all the things that he did in the middle with the atrocities was awful, plus taking away states' rights, awful. But again, remember, Lincoln was killed before the end of the Civil War. And guys, this Rothschild banking cartel, this Sabbatean Kabbalist group of people that have been doing all this, these guys that had this atavistic hatred towards Christians in the United States and all of us that profess Christ, these guys aren't going to stop. This is what their masters called them to do, and they're willing to die for what they believe in. So the question is, are you? Are you willing to go out and do what you need to do to talk to people about Christ, to become a witness for Christ, to lead by example with Christianity? And guys, it's so important that we all learn to do that in our marriages, with our children, in our households, with our offices, with our businesses. You guys never hear me back away from this. And we have gotten a plethora of emails from all over the world. You guys are too religious. And Ted, you're ridiculous for the stuff you talk about with Jesus all the time. And we love your news. You do a great job on the radio. But all you'd ever do is talk about Christ. That's right. That's right. That's, you know. And so ask yourself a question. If you're ever accused of being a Christian, is there enough evidence to convict you? Well, there sure is with me, I hope. And see, and that's what I'm going to always do, guys. And you say, well, your show could be a lot bigger if you didn't do that. Well, yeah, I know my show could be a lot bigger if I don't do that. Don't really care. That's not who I'm called to do. That's not who I am. I'm going to be who I am through Christ Jesus. I'm going to, first and foremost, God called me out of retirement. He did that for me. I was checking out of the, out of this work world. I was done with it. I was going to retire, go play golf, or go whatever I was going to do. I don't know. But I had enough of this constant having to work all the time. And when God called me out of retirement, I never thought about the fact that when God's anointing's on you, you can't retire. I don't care if you're 60, 70, 80, or 90. If you still have the capability of doing what you got, you're called to do with God's anointing, you have to do it to the best of your ability with all of your heart. And that's why I do this show this way. So guys, thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting Health Masters. Thank you for supporting the show. Thank you for telling your friends about the show. Because, guys, I am just absolutely all sold out for Jesus Christ, for Yeshua and Yahweh, and that's how I'm going to live the rest of my life. Okay, Austin, that's my opening statement. You got anything you want to add to that?
Amen, man. That was an excellent opening statement. Yes, I do want to add something to that, because this is kind of a tip of what I've been doing research on in my own life, and also what I just got an article today that is pretty interesting. Pretty much about a year, yeah, Hunter's 20 months old now. Hunter's 20 months old. So about a year and a half ago or so, Lana and I started discussing different family options of what are good practices every day. And one of those is eating as a family together at least one time a day. That's something that I've read about numerous times. Before we had Hunter, we would do that occasionally, but Lana and I were usually together all the time, so it was just kind of a normal thing. Well, once Hunter came along, you know, she was taking care of him a lot. They were busy. I work all the time. I'm busy. Most of the time, I'm gone in the morning before they even get up. I leave early to come to the office. So most of the time, the only option we really have to eat together is dinner time. So we've been trying to make it a point every single day to at least have one meal together. Well, now there's a new article that just came out that was published, a new study published in the Journal of Developmental and Behavioral Pediatrics, and they were showing how eating out generally is associated with poor food choices, bad health, and fewer family meals. But this Canadian study now that was just published shows that children who routinely eat their meals together with the entire family are more likely to experience long-term physical and mental health benefits. Previous research by two Emory University psychology professors showed that families who regularly share meals together have children who are more about their family history, who know more about their family history, and tend to have higher self-esteem, interact better with peers, and show higher resilience in the face of adversity. University de Montreal doctorate student Marae Jose Harvey and her supervisor, psychoeducation professor Linda Pagani, made their findings on family eatings after following a cohort of Quebec children born between 97 and 98. The study looked at children who had been followed by researchers since they were 5 months old as part of the study of child development. At age six, they started having the parents reporting on whether or not their families had meals together. By age 10, parents, teachers, and children themselves provided information on the children's lifestyle, habits, and their social well-being. They said the presence of parents during meal times likely provides young children with first-hand social interaction, discussions of social issues, day-to-day concerns, and vicarious learning of pro-social interactions in a familiar and emotionally secure setting. Experiencing positive forms of communication may likely help the child engage in better communication skills with people outside of the family unit and improve the overall child's well-being. There's some more stuff in the article, but that's pretty much the gist of it. So that's something I kind of wanted to add on top of what you said, Dad, of just essentially a tip to try to help out, especially with younger kids as they're starting to grow, eating at least one meal today, a day together as an entire family has been shown this for decades, but now more and more studies that they've been working on over 10 to 15 years are confirming that exact same thing. So that's one little aspect, I think, that's a positive thing that we can all add, especially if you have children in your life that are young like that, that really helps out with overall family unit and especially with a childhood's younger development, Dad.
Well, parents need to understand something, that children need a daddy and a mommy together.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying it can't be done, because my mom and my dad got divorced when I was like, you know, 3-4 years old. I mean, I was raised by my grandfather pretty much until he died when I was like 14-15 years old, and he was only spending 6 months out of the year with us in Germany. Of course, it was kind of good because it taught me how to speak pretty good German. So it's one of those, because he spoke no English. But, you know, he was like the alpha male in the house. But the problem with my mom and him is they got along so badly. They used to fight all the time. And she fought all the time with my dad. Because my mom, remember, gosh, I can't believe I tell you guys this stuff. My mom went through a lot in Nazi Germany. She went through a lot. And, you know, she was stabbed and left for dead at the end of the war. Stabbed 16 times. Austin knows that story. And so she never really overcame all of those things that had happened to her, which I can't really say that I would overcome something like that. And so she lived most of her life in fear. So it was an interesting experience being raised with her. But I felt bad for her. I mean, I really did. I mean, that's why I honored her, and she had a great funeral. And I love all the things she did positive for me. And she did a lot of great things. She always taught us to be on time. She always taught us to pay our bills. She always taught us to keep our word. She always told us to keep the truth. I mean, she always taught us to work hard. I mean, so there were all kinds of great things that we learned from her. But I missed my dad. And so I actually had a surrogate father who basically took over when I was about 12 years old. And he was a chemist who worked for American Cyanide back in the 70s. And he was a good guy. And he basically helped me and kind of led me the way I should go and all the other things. And of course, he wasn't saved is the problem. But he was a good man. But I still got saved, because at least my mom took me to church until I was all the way through the eighth grade to get confirmed, which was my dad's request in the divorce papers. So it's one of those things that I've been through a broken home. And I mean, I've seen what happens with the children and how they're affected by it, guys. And it's never good. It's never good. It's never okay. It's never God's will for that to happen. But the thing about it is that if you choose well to start with, and you really work through your issues before you get married, it makes it a lot easier. And then you always have to have the understanding that I'm going to do everything I possibly can, because if I don't correct these issues that I have with this marriage, they're going to just creep back in on the next marriage. And that's why so many people get divorced the second time, the third time, the fourth time, the fifth time. I mean, I know people have been married 6 or 7 times. I know radio talk show hosts have had multiple wives. I mean, it's one of those things that you see on an ongoing basis, and it's never good for the kids that are involved. Never good at all. By the way, this is an article from Byron York, and this is the Washington Examiner. Now, I'm not sure if this is a good magazine or whatever it is. I'm not sure. It's coming from Washington. It's probably liberal. But he has something interesting about this. He goes, amid firestorms, President Donald Trump has had a year of solid policy accomplishments. Can he keep it going? Something is happening in the final days of 2017. People are noticing that Donald Trump has gotten a lot done in his tumultuous first year in the White House. And he really has. Now, some of the things he's done I don't like. I've been very candid with you guys, very direct about that. Assume that the tax reform passes and is signed into law. If in, say, 2014, a Republican of either the conservative or moderate variety predicted that 2017, a newly elected GOP president in Congress would, number one, cut corporate and individual taxes, number two, repeal the Obama individual health care mandate, the penalty part, appoint a highly respected conservative to the Supreme Court, appoint in 1 year a record number of judges to circuit courts, get rid of reams of unnecessary regulations, destroy ISIS, and approve pipeline projects and new oil drilling. Nobody would have believed it. Everybody would have been very happy. The Republicans would probably have cheered loudly. No need to go through the litany of complaints against the president or the succession of the hair on fire, Twitter-fueled controversies that have marked the wildest first year of a presidential politician, or the special counsel investigation of the Trump-Russia affair some Democrats and some never-Trump Republicans hope will result in Trump's removal from office. Despite it all, Trump has racked up a solid record of first-year accomplishments, plus the doggone New York Stock Exchange has gone up 5,000 points. But now, let me share something with you. That has absolutely nothing to do with Trump. This is the Sabotaging Cabalist group loosening the M1 money supply and buying up the stocks through mergers and acquisitions and buying back their own stocks. That's why the prices have gone up so much. They're using the funny money they printed through all the quantitative easing and all the off-book balance sheets money to buy up their own stocks. What they're doing at this point, it looks like to me, is they're monetizing the debt. In other words, they're inflating everything right now in the United States. I mean, Bitcoin has gone through the roof. Stock market's gone through the roof. Halliburton's now, not Halliburton, the one that Warren Buffett owns is $300,000. I mean, all of these things have gone up higher and higher and higher and higher. And now more things are getting more and more and more expensive, which means that we're monetizing the debt, which is one of the things they can do. They can either blow the world up or they can monetize the debt. This is what happened with the Weimar Republic. So I'm telling you again, and I'm really urging you guys, if you've got good profits in the market, you've got good profits in what you're doing, just be weary of, you know, your principal that you've invested. Just really be careful with it. I'm not giving you any financial advice. Just be careful, because I've been around for a long time and I've watched these boom bust cycles, and every single time it's a big boom, then it's another big bust, then it's another big boom, and it's another big bust. And every single time, the general masses of the population lose more and more of their net worth, and the bankers get richer and richer. So just be very, very careful. But I will say for Trump, for the things that he's done that have been good, if he can get this tax thing passed, he's done a lot. And if he can't, then it'll be because John McCain can't vote in the Senate because he's basically hospitalized, or somebody has turned on Trump at the very end, like, you know, Bubble Boy Rubio. But something, if he can get this through, and my biggest thing with this thing, the thing that's going to affect me more than anything else, is the individual mandate penalty from IRS for the not having health insurance. That's going to really affect me in a positive way. So if he can get that done, bravo, Trump. Austin, you got anything else you want to add to that?
Yeah, always. The metals are low right now. Precious metals, gold, silver, including platinum. Everything's low because they've been pushing all the money into the stocks and bonds and Bitcoin. So if you're interested in something, that's something to look at. Again, I'm not giving you financial advice, but that's what I always like, is having real, true physical assets in my hand. Also, other news, didn't get a chance to talk about it much yesterday about Amtrak or Atlanta Airport, but I wanted to touch base on this very shortly here, because obviously, you know, that was a horrific incident that happened on Amtrak. There's already been people starting to put reports out that Antifa could have been involved in that. I have no idea if that's accurate or not. I'm not sure, quite frankly, at all. I've just heard that multiple places. But what I do know now is that the Amtrak was doing over three times the speed limit that it was supposed to be doing on that curve. It killed numerous people, as you guys already know. The Amtrak 501 train was carrying 86 people. This is on its first journey on this new service route from Seattle to Portland. It's not clear why the train was traveling 80 miles an hour in the 30-mile-per-hour zone on the corner. The track had already undergone millions of dollars in improvements, and the train had done dozens of tests weeks before. The investigators were able now to get the information about the speed from a data recorder retrieved from the rear locomotive, and they looked at the positive train control, which this is what is pretty much a backup system if the train conductor is not doing something properly, if he's going too fast. The positive train control will actually signal the train to slow down. It's designed to interface with the train and the track. However, the PTC, is what it was called, was not installed in the segment of the tracks where the derailment happened. And it was installed, but it was not operational yet. The target date to have it working was the spring quarter of 2018. But what's very strange about this, already we're seeing the train was running 80 miles an hour in a 30-mile-an-hour zone on a very tight corner, which is very skeptical to me of either this was intentional or somebody was hijacking this. But now I find out today that DuPont Mayor casualty incident training operation was underway when the Amtrak derailment occurred.
Right.
Ironically, City Mayor Mike Kortz and his team, along with numerous agencies now, have reported in DuPont, Washington, that they were conducting a training session for a mass casualty incident close by when the Amtrak Cascade derailment occurred, killing six people and sending 70 others to the hospital. According to the report, many agencies were in the area planning their day for the exact same scenario as it actually played out in real time. Now, the weird thing about this is we saw this happen at 9/11. We saw this happen at Boston Marathon. We saw this happen in the London bombing back in 2007.
Yep.
On and on and on. We've seen this happen where a drill is happening, and all of a sudden, somehow, it just goes off. Now, this report was aired on ABC News for a very, very brief time early yesterday, and it was buried by all other media for no apparent reason at all now. Nobody's talking about it, and nobody's bringing it up, but I want to make sure I touch base on this because there's some weird stuff that's going on with this now. And not to mention, we had an incredibly weird incident, as you guys, I'm sure, saw at the Atlanta Hartsfield Jackson Airport Sunday afternoon. This is one of the world's busiest airports, descended into total darkness and anarchy after a fire knocked out power to the entire facility and shut down the backup systems. The one individual that they interviewed, I read this today, he said, "It felt like I stepped into a more modern-day version of Mad Max. Soon, within an hour after the power going out, people started raiding stores just because of want." He said he actually escaped from the airport after about 2 hours and had to walk 6 miles in search of food after witnessing mobs overpowering clerks and forcing their way into shops in search of supplies, food, and water. After nearly 11 hours, over 1,000 flight cancellations, Hartsfield Jackson Atlanta Airport hobbled back to life, but the international air travel snarl is far from ironed out. While a fire is being blamed for the outage by Georgia Power, its cause is not yet known yet. But even more is that, even the stranger aspect, is how a single disturbance could cause such an unprecedented breakdown, including recently departed U.S. Secretary of Transportation Anthony Fox, who is trapped on the tarmac in Atlanta for over 5 hours. He said a fire should not paralyze the country's busiest airport for over half the day. It may take a couple hours to bring alternative power to the airport, but if the airport infrastructure itself is not significantly damaged, it should never have been nearly this painful. Now, the reason why I wanted to bring that up and touch base on this is because it shows you how just in a few hours, this is only out for a total of 11 hours, and with just in a few hours, the airport in some sections turned into total chaos with people trying to get water and food, because literally, I mean, you guys understand, they had a total blackout, completely shut down, everything completely shut down, and within just a few hours, anarchy completely enveloped this airport, which is pretty much one of the biggest, busiest airports in the United States. This is why I always tell you guys, now this is difficult in the airport because you can't really bring anything with you whatsoever, but this gives you a very, very vivid current example of why I tell everybody to always have backup supplies in your vehicle, especially if you're driving. Again, it's hard to apply that to airports because they're so strict. That's why I do not fly. When I have flown recently this year, I absolutely loathed it. Try to do it and avoid it as few as possible, but this is a reason why you always need to have water, food, ammunition, backup medic supplies on your person or in your vehicle at all times in the event like something like this happens, because it only takes a few hours for people to realize that they're in a tight situation and they're going to do everything they can to help their family survive with food and water. And this goes back to what I was talking about yesterday. Now, I've been so troubled by the fact that Boykins, the county commissioner up in Illinois, is talking about Chicago. Richard Boykin is blatantly asking for UN troops to come in and do peacekeeping work inside of Chicago. Now, you guys have seen this. Dave Hodges has put it out. I've talked about it numerous times. The UN is totally bent on disarming the entire country. They do not like the United States having weapons. They've been very candid about that numerous occasions. Now, the UN only has a little under 100,000 active duty soldiers on tap at all times, meaning it would essentially be virtually impossible for these guys to come into the United States and completely take over the United States. It wouldn't physically work. There's no way. It couldn't happen. Not with our armaments, not with our tactical ability, and not with our retired military. Would not even come close. However, as I said yesterday, they need a precipitating incident to get the UN's foot in the door so they can start going in and confiscating weapons. And what better example to use that on as Chicago, as a beta test to get these guys into Chicago, because, you know, genocide, they're shooting everybody. There's been over 600 homicides this year. We have to get the UN troops in there to restore law and order. That's what they're trying to claim now. And as you've seen numerous times, the UN has put out manuals on how to basically disarm countries, how to handle that, and how to go in from door to door and do firearm confiscation, including advertisements that they have put out in multiple ads in the United States, posting title as a disarmament, demobilization, and reintegration officer that they have put out in New York. So this is something, again, you guys need to be very, very awake on. St. Louis, Chicago, those states, those cities up there, those areas, be very, very alert and stay frosty on what's going on. Because after I saw this with the Cook County Commissioner discussing this last week, there's a very, very strong possibility they're going to bring the UN. And that sizable force of troops, even half that, could very easily come in and take over Chicago. And there would be some heavy resistance from a lot of those guys that are not going to want to give up their guns, even the gang members. And it would be very, very aggressive behavior, but it would give the UN peacekeeper troops the first hands-on firefight techniques on how to engage U.S. citizens with deadly force in the United States. And I really pray it does not escalate to that. But after he brought this up, I have a very strong feeling that they're trying to tell us what they're about to do to get these guys' foot in the door so they can start doing disarmament and aka peacekeeping missions in the United States, Dad. So I just wanted to kind of bring that up again if you guys haven't listened to yesterday's show yet.
Well, always remember, Chicago is 234 square miles. That's just the city limits. When you get out behind that, you've got probably over 1,000 miles, 1,500 miles around the surrounding areas. They're already pretty much, from the government standpoint, a gun-free zone. So if they were going into homes and disarming the American population that are there in Chicago, it would be pretty much game over as far as anybody having guns who was a legal human being who was there to defend themselves. They would have their guns taken away, too, and they'd probably get shot, you know, because they were having guns inside of the city limits. This UN's peacekeeping force, for something this big, let's say you have 500 square miles in the surrounding area that have to be completely policed, it would take tens of thousands of UN troops to go in to do that, right? Tens of thousands. I mean, because you have, it's just too big of an area. So this is crazy that these guys are actually requesting this type of intervention as a sovereign state inside of a sovereign country by the United Nations, when they simply, all they need to do is rearm their population there and let people defend themselves, and all of these gangs are going to move out and go somewhere else where people don't shoot back. And yes, you got the M13 gangs basically running around doing all of this stuff in a lot of these big cities now, and it's all tactical moves we get by George Soros and all of his little cronies to try to bring in martial law in the United States. Remember, this deep state, this fight now that we see between Donald Trump and the deep state, these guys are serious. I mean, they had Hillary Clinton's shoe in the door in the White House, the largest career criminal murdering couple in the history of our country. They were going to be able to completely take over the United States, take over the guns, you know, make bestiality and pedophilia legal. They were going to do everything, put in more and more federal court judges, stack the Supreme Court. They saw her as the final vestige they needed to bring in their new world order ASAP. And now Donald Trump's coming there and he's dismantling a lot of this stuff. Now, a lot of these federal judges that are doing all these stupid things, they need to move for impeachment on these guys to get these guys off the bench, because a lot of these guys that Obama and Bush and Clinton put in many, many years ago need to be replaced, because the federal society, you know, with Newt Gingrich, they pretty much stacked these courts, they stacked the judges, they stacked the attorneys, they stacked all of this stuff with these types of people that are wanting this new world order, the globalists. And guys, that's got to be turned around if we're going to do anything to get this fixed. By the way, you guys have heard me talk many, many times about being in the hospital. And this is an article. It doesn't have a happy ending, but I'm going to share this with you. A 56-year-old man enters the hospital with shoulder pain. However, when he was in the hospital, he developed a MRSA infection. He was super active, super hard worker, did everything he possibly could to help his neighbors. Everybody loved him. He was a big guy. He tore a rotator cuff doing exercise. And he basically had to go to the doctor, and he didn't know what to do. Then he started having problems after he got a flu vaccine on top of all that. So finally, the people and his neighbors finally said, look, you've got to see that medical advice. And he went into the hospital. He ended up having the surgery. He ended up getting MRSA. And 6 weeks later, after this strapping, huge guy was incredibly healthy, goes into the hospital, he died. He's dead. Gone. Now, the reason I give you this story, and I get a lot of these stories across my desk, I don't cover these very often, but since this guy's 6 years younger than I am, I want to tell you a story. I have one of our listeners, a guy by the name of Randy, a friend of mine out of Texas. He goes, we'd like it when you tell us these stories of your life. I'm like, well, I don't really know if my life's that exciting, but I do have some interesting stories. But I remember years ago, about 10 years ago, Austin, you remember this, I was going in for rotator cuff surgery. Now, it wasn't rotator cuff. That had been cleared up through what's called prolotherapy. I avoided surgery with that on my left shoulder. And I had a bone spur on the bicep tendon area. I was going to have that shaved off. And I went into the hospital. It was an outpatient center. And I'm not going to mention any names because I really respect the surgeon. And I went in there, and it was Halloween. It was like a couple of days before Halloween. And I went into this surgery center, and they had witches hanging from the ceiling, You guys think I'm joking, but I'm not. They had caskets with dead bodies in them, little small ones, sitting on the countertop. They had spider webs hanging everywhere. And, I mean, it was like walking into a Satan's operating room. And so I go in there, and I'm looking at all this stuff, and I said to him, I said, you know, guys, I'm a Christian. This stuff's really offensive to me. Oh, ha, 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 it's just holiday fun. I'm like, well, this isn't fun to me. This is some weird stuff. You know, if you, like I said, I've seen some weird stuff in my life. When you see this weird stuff, that stuff's not funny anymore. And so I remember they had me in the, they put me in my little gown, no back on it. My clothes were all off. They had me covered up with electrodes. They were about to go ahead and give me a shot to have the surgery. And I looked at the nurse who had the needle in her hand, and I said, I'm done. She goes, what do you mean you're done? I said, I'm leaving. And she goes, what do you mean you're leaving? I said, I'm walking out. And she goes, what do you mean you're walking out? I said, do you not understand what walking out means? How many of you want me to just break it down and spell these words for you? I'm leaving. She goes, well, you're prepped for surgery. I stood up, and I pulled the gown off, started pulling all the electrodes off myself. Well, I'm not prepped for surgery anymore, am I? I'm done. And I said, I refuse to walk into this place and go under anesthesia with who knows what's floating around in here from another dimension with all these things that you have in here. And she looked at me, she goes, you're really serious about this, aren't you? I said, you see me getting up? I'm getting dressed now. I'm leaving. And I said, and quite frankly, you better not send me a bill for this. I said, I'm out. I said, if you guys are that inept that you want to put stuff like this in your doggone surgery center, I said, I don't know what to say. And I got my clothes on. I called up my wife. She was still sitting outside. I mean, she hadn't even left yet. She was still waiting to see how the surgery was going to go. And she comes walking back in. She goes, you're really leaving? I said, yep, I'm not going to do it. Now, here's the good news about all that. I started on the magnesium products, soaking my feet every single day, using magnesium sports oil. And that bone spur completely went away by itself. Completely is gone. It's gone now. And I have no problem with that shoulder anymore. I can actually sleep on that shoulder again. And I never had to do the surgery. And I'm telling you all this to say this to you. When you walk into a surgical center, or you walk into a hospital, or you walk into a doctor's office, you better have your immune system frosty. You better have potassium iodide in your system. You better have astragalus in your system. You better have vitamin C in your system. You better have D3K2 in your system. You better have your immune system through the roof. Because MRSA kills thousands of people, and hospital infections kill thousands of people every single year in the United States, every single year. So be very, very careful when you go into a hospital or any type of place like that, that you have possibility of infection, and get out as quickly as you possibly can and check the records of the hospital to find out how many MRSA infections they've had that year. Because, guys, some of these older hospitals, they are completely, they should be closed down and bulldozed and burned because they're that bad as far as MRSA infections. And I really recommend that you avoid those types of procedures and only use them as the absolute last resort if you absolutely have to do it, Austin. Anything else you want to add to that?
Yeah, you're very accurate about that. There's a local hospital here down the road from us, and they've been plagued with issues with MRSA. And, I mean, everybody knows that around here. You try not to go to them at all. The good hospital around here would be like Celebration. That's a good hospital. And like Dad said, you know, this is why we always recommend always trying to go the natural approach first. Obviously, there's some cases that that's just not an option. I understand that. And the medical aspect of it is great for that. But there's too many times, as Dad has seen it, I've seen it, and over and over and over again, where something happens, you go in for a petty issue or you have a surgery and it ends up escalating. It may not even be MRSA. I've seen this happen too, and I've gotten email after email after email that I can't even count anymore, where people go in with an issue of blood pressure, or they go an issue and the doctor calls them up for blood work and their cholesterol, and then all of a sudden 6 months later they don't even know how it happened. They're on 4, 5, 6, 7 different medications and they don't even know what to do anymore. I get those emails all the time. I told you an example of that last week with one of our customers, and he worked with his doctor, and his doctor was actually pretty cool with him, allowing him to use natural supplements and try to come off the medications under his doctor's advice. That has to be very, very careful whenever you're starting to go through this stuff. Also, too, this is a very strange article, but we talk about some weird stuff anyways on here, so I was going to bring it up just because this is where society is starting to push us now. Another article came out now from a doctor saying that robots and humans will have babies and create a new hybrid species within the next 100 years. He said AI robots could soon be having children with their owners, according to a leading artificial intelligence expert and doctor. Dr. Levy's predictions are based on research from Ohio State University, where scientists have now developed nanotechnology-based chips that can successfully inject genetic code into skin cells. He said this chip process, known as tissue nanotransfection, otherwise known as TNT, will allow the genetic code of a robot to be passed on to its offspring along with human genetic code. He said, suddenly the very real possibility has appeared on the horizon of the robots of the future manipulating human skin cells to create human sperm and human eggs, and from them, using the Ohio discovery of TNT as the basis, create an entire human baby whose embryo can be nurtured and carried through pregnancy by a mother surrogate. This is how I believe it will be possible within the foreseeable future for humans and robots to make babies together. This is a very, very odd article. Whether or not they have already started doing this, I don't know. He's saying 100 years. I think it's much closer than that. This is kind of the dream of a lot of the globalists, and we've talked about it before with the mending of machines and human beings together. We've already seen this with artificial limbs now, that they're able to do that with connecting through chips in the brain where you can actually feel and control your hand, and it's a completely prosthetic arm from the shoulder down, and you can grip, you can grab, you can make a fist, you can do everything, and it's controlled by your brain. They've already got that working now. So now they actually want to start using humans and robots to make hybrid babies. I find this very odd, but I have a feeling that this technology has been around for a while, and now again, as we're starting to see, and this is why I bring this up, they're starting to push this out into the mainstream media to normalize this, so in the next 5 or 10 years when they say, oh, we just happened to come out with this hybrid child now, a lot of people are not going to be shocked. In fact, a lot of people are probably actually going to be excited about this with the way that technology and the AI is blending so much into our lives now that within the next decade, it's going to be a very, very blurry line of what's actually human and what is actually artificial intelligence robotics, Deb.
I completely agree with you. In fact, what they're going to do is, we've talked about this before, they're going to make robots so incredibly lifelike that you simply, unless you know they're a robot, you won't know they're a robot. And again, they'll be programmable. And so you'll be able to have the robot that you want, both husband and wife, male and female, and this thing's going to you. This whole transhumanism, that's where it's headed. They want, and see, remember, when they start doing all of this stuff and they start doing test tube babies and all the other things that they can do using different types of surrogacy, it's going to be able to allow them to control who gets to reproduce. It's what always happens.
Yep.
And this is where it's all going to go. This dystopian George Orwell future. By the way, liberals are taking aim at white people again as George Soros funded panel attacks the very idea of white womanhood. I mean, you know, it's just, it never ends with these guys. They're saying that basically one of the organizers, Sophia Ellen Golan, she's a Jewish lesbian. She shared a graphic on her Twitter account that shows the percentage of white women who voted for Roy Moore over Democrat Doug Jones, and said the fact that the majority of white women did not support Jones is apparently enough evidence for Golan that they had to be a racist. She makes it clear that the left now believes that if a white woman votes for Republican, then that white woman is a racist, and if white women conform to the liberal orthodoxy, she is only inherently racist, but at least trying to fight it. This lady, somebody must have dropped her on her head when she was young, but she's in her 20s, and she's one of the most vile human beings. Again, Sophie, you look her up online, Sophie Ellen Golan, she's a Jewish lesbian, and she's not a bad-looking girl, but she's got herself so knotted up now from political correctness and apparently from wherever she went to school, that she believes that all white women are racist if they voted for Judge Roy Moore, not to think what she'd think of white women who voted for Donald Trump. The sad part about this is, this lady is actually, because of the mainstream media, getting national attention in a lot of different media outlets. And it's sad to me, Austin, that this is who we have in front of us, that we are now teaching people to emulate. And it goes back to the very first opening statement that I made today. What do you think, and what's your next story?
Yeah, that's exactly what, I mean... Well, this whole feminist liberal agenda is, the media is pushing it. They're intentionally giving a lot of this stuff as much positive publicity as possible, because it's what Dad talked about at the beginning of the show. They're trying to completely ruin the family unit. They want to completely get rid of this as they're bringing in designer AI human hybrid robotic babies that they want to do now. With all this stuff now, that now they're bringing out these sex robots that are incredibly successful. I mean, these things, from the research that I've seen, and especially with this article, because this article went into all kinds of other detail that I didn't bring up, but they're a huge hit. And I told you about the survey that was done last week when they surveyed a group of 18 to 30-year-old adults that, like, almost a third of them said they would have a relationship with a robot. They were completely okay with that. And that, again, is to completely ruin the true Christian family dynamic home unity as best as possible. They've already done it now with getting the divorce rate as high as possible, trying to increase this whole gay agenda that they've been doing, and you guys already know this whole story that's been going on for the last 30 or 40 years to ruin the family dynamic. Now they're bringing in the AI, now they're bringing in this feminist agenda, and they're doing it all as aggressively as possible now. Has anybody noticed that everything about this has sped up? And I've said this so many times, and I sound redundant, but I'm trying to make sure everybody understands they are playing for blood now. This is not a joke to them anymore. They know that the alternative media is getting this out there. They know that a huge percentage of the population is starting to wake up. I mean, our listeners are so smart, they forward this out to everybody. I mean, I get emails all the time from our listeners. Oh man, you guys made a great point with this. I'm forwarding it to this. We have somebody else listening to it. That is what our ultimate goal is because if we can continue to wake up a huge percentage of the population, we are literally going to be unstoppable with Christ behind us. And I don't think God Almighty has given up on this country yet. I really think, as Dad said before, I think we can get a reprieve. Remember, there is no timeline that God has to follow. He doesn't go, well, it's 2018. I have to do this now. There's no other option. I'm just obligated because of the clock now. He doesn't have to follow a timeline. He can do anything whenever he wants to do it, however he wants to do it. Obviously, as we've seen with Revelation, if you've read it, certain things, significant timeline. He didn't say, well, guys, understand the Revelation starts at the beginning of 2019. There's nothing I can do about it. I'm stuck to that time now. He doesn't have to follow that. So if he sees that this country is trying to turn from a lot of its ways, and they're trying to repent and trying to follow God and trying to do the best they can as a Christian nation, I truly think we can get more time, which is my goal for my kids and, you know, Hunter's kids. I mean, I don't want to hand this country over to my son the way it is right now. It's turned into a garbage nation. And I'm American. I'm proud to be here. But it's sad of what we're promoting, what we're doing, and what we're allowing to become so prevalent in the family, in the media, all over the country that we're actually normalizing now and saying this is okay behavior. It's sad to me. And so I think there's a lot of stuff we can continue to do by getting information out there like this and doing the best we can as American Christian patriots. And so, yeah, Dad, it's sad that a lot of this is going on. But even this article that I thought was pretty cool today, Tennessee now has now proposed a law that will require municipalities to hold a non-binding referendum election before property tax or sales tax revenue can be used to serve as debt on a professional sports team stadium.
Good.
What's going on
Good.
With this now, specifically of Nissan Stadium, home of the Nissan Titans? McCormick, Representative Gerald McCormick, said, I have heard a lot from people who said they should get a good look at subsidies going to sports stadiums owned by millionaires, not even from Tennessee. He goes, you have an NFL football team. We're subsidizing that as players that won't even take 2 minutes to stand up during a national anthem. A measure previously has been filed also by Representative Judd Manthey that seeks to prohibit the state from providing state funds for professional sports organizations. I am fully in line with that. These guys, NFL is a multi billion-dollar industry. The fact that they get state subsidies and state grants to build these stadiums around there so it brings in more revenue for the city and the state is complete and total garbage. They don't need free money. They don't need tax breaks to build these monster stadiums. They're going to build them wherever they want to build them regardless, and they know, the NFL knows, they're going to bring in billions of dollars of revenue. It is not our responsibility as tax-paying Americans to subsidize this stuff, especially if the NFL will not even require its players that get paid tens of millions of dollars a year to respect the national anthem and other aspects of our United States military and our great nation as a whole. So I'm very glad to see Tennessee doing that. I really wish other states would fall in line and do that as well, Dev.
Well, you know, when the Glazers bought the Tampa Bay Bucks many years ago, they basically told Tampa Bay through their proxy people that they were going to move the Bucks out of Tampa Bay if they didn't get a brand new stadium. And they wanted to pay for it by Tampa. You know, I mean, they wanted tax dollars to pay for it. I mean, they wanted to give them the stadium. Now, remember, these guys are billionaires. And, you know, and remember, guys, when you get involved with these people, and I'm not saying the Glazers are this or the Glazers that, because I don't know the Glazers, okay? But a lot of these guys are Sabbatean Kabbalists is what they are. And they're just Luciferians.
And that's why they allowed these types of halftime ceremonies to be done at the Super Bowl, in which Lucifer is clearly and openly praised and worshipped. I can't say that any more clearly than that. If they really were against that, they would be pitching fits as a group and stopping that. So we've got a group of people out there that have been taken over by these international banking cartel cutout people that are basically billionaires, like, you know, we don't even know how they became billionaires, but suddenly they're billionaires and they're given all this authority and all this power. And they live down there in, you know, I think it's Maripan out there down there called off of Palm Beach in this, you know, $30-40 million home, which I don't have a problem with that. The guys have the money, who cares? But if it's being given to them from, you know, our tax dollars, are you kidding me? Really? That's why I said, if they have a $500 million loss this year because of NFL revenue, it's not going to affect these guys at all because they get all these tax subsidies and tax breaks. I mean, it's just less income tax for them to pay. It's not going to affect their lifestyle.
Yep.
They're not going to qualify for the food stamp program suddenly. It's not going to happen. Okay? And so that's why we have to understand that. By the way, the Charlottesville police officer who let the people fight and start the riot has retired, effective immediately. He's come under so much heat now. The truth has come out about what he did, allowing those people to fight in the death of that one individual, that now he's like, you know what, I gotta go. So he quit immediately. So I'm really happy to see that Charlottesville's put pressure on him because they had all that unwanted bad publicity, and I'm glad this guy is gone, another Antifa boy. And another Black Lives Matter boy, just letting these guys come in and run amok. So I'm glad that nonsense has stopped. Guys, thank you for listening to the show today. I love you guys. I appreciate you. You guys are absolutely awesome. Thanks for getting your multiple vitamins from us. Again, remember, they're in powder form, which is one I take. I love that. They're also in capsules. You can swallow them. And they're also the ones that are in chewable form. So you guys are supporting us, keeping us out here, keeping our news flowing. And I just want you to know something. I appreciate you. And I wish you a blessed Christmas season. And I just really wish I could come give every one of you guys a hug in person, but I can't do that. There's so many of you. So thank you again for your support. I love you guys. Austin, I'll do the write-up. You go ahead and close, buddy. I love you.
Absolutely, guys. Thank you for all the support and the emails. Be sure to check out the website at healthmasters.com. The Cortisol Buster, which is on sale for product of the week, 10% off. That will be changing tomorrow, so be sure to get on the website and vote for whatever product you want to win right now. A lot of good products on there. The vitamin C is doing pretty good. The thyroid support's doing good. So check that out on the website and vote and let us know what you want. If you guys need anything, you know where to call, 1-800-726-1834. You guys have an awesome night, a blessed night, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow as always.